This is Scott Becker, and today's podcast discusses digital health investing and digital health trends. We'll talk about 15, 16 points related to digital health investing. This will be a podcast for Becker's Healthcare, as well as Becker's Private Equity and Business. Thank you. So 2020, our first point is, so an absolute explosion in digital health investing. This has been well documented. Some of the core numbers are $14.1 billion was invested in digital health, of which 20% of that was invested in direct-to-consumer digital health. We'll talk about some of the difference in a moment. There was also $37 billion market cap of digital health IPOs. This included companies like Livongo and others. But so big, big numbers in digital health investing in 2020. This was a record year by almost double from any other year prior to that. We always talk about startups. Our second point is we always talk about startups in digital health and software as a service really as follows. And there's sort of a funnel. There's an idea. That's sort of step one. There's actually a product. Somebody's actually made the effort to code and put together and develop a product. The third is there's some users and revenue and actual revenue. The fourth is, and this could be fourth or fifth, there's profits at some margins. And again, there's so much interest in digital health and software as a service because the margins can be so great when it gets going above a certain scale. And then fifth, there's scalability and distribution. And sort of the gold mine is investors looking for products that can do all of these and most importantly, you have the ability to hit scalability and distribution. So you got an idea or product that solves a problem, it's a big enough problem, and it can get scale and distribution. We'll talk a little bit at some point about the broad categories and the differences in direct to businesses versus direct to consumer and the overlap. So the third point today is there's three really broad categories of digital health, sort of software as a service, digital health markets. They're selling directly to health systems and providers. That's number one. And that's 80% or so of the market, but changing. Second, there's digital health selling directly to consumers, digital health products. And this could be everything from platform telehealth platforms that are used to guide you directly to telehealth without directly being part of a provider system. Or this could be wearables that help you on digital health. Or this could be sort of the diabetes wearables and trackables. Third is, there's a great overlap in consumer-facing digital health. Is it truly directly sold to the consumer or accessed by a relationship with the provider, health system, or payer or employer? So these lines are somewhat blurry, but generally you look at things that are sold directly through health systems or sold directly to consumers. Our fourth point today is, there's an absolute ton of growth in the venture capital world and PE world in this area. Tremendous amount of niche and specialized funds and efforts. You see, really recently, lots of what you'd call digital innovation funds, digital health funds. And some of these specialize in consumer-driven versus business-driven. You see players like A16Z, Live Oak, and Sevenware Ventures that have become in different ways very famous over some period of time, but some very quickly. One of the things we talk about when we talk about this explosion of investing is everybody seems to have a health part of the portfolio today, and more that health part of the portfolio is driven towards digital health, not just provider platforms. Fifth point today is there are a lot of different places that digital health firms are focusing on. And I'll give you six of these here, and we'll come back to this a little bit later. Data, security, and cyber issues, supply chain issues, improving financial operations and business operations, improving patient and consumer experience, a ton of chat functions, text functions, and communication functions, behavioral health areas, and then sort of what I would call AI and machine learning ingrained into practices and operations to reduce staffing and improve efficiencies. So a ton of solutions are beyond software and service, but artificial intelligence and machine learning that is intended to be ingrained into practices and operations to reduce staffing and improve efficiencies. A great example, that's a revenue cycle fund called Akasa that really aims to greatly reduce the staff need in revenue cycle by greatly improving machine learning and AI as part of revenue cycle. Sixth point we'll take today is that startups in the software and service area and the digital health area were 2x the amount in 2020 versus 2019. So really a ton of growth in the number of startups driven a lot by the pandemic and so forth. Seventh is a lot of companies that are directly in the consumer space, companies like GoodRx that are intended to attach to patients and help them with their prescriptions, Babylon Health, which is another effort recently funded trying to go public through a SPAC that's aimed at sort of telehealth direct to the consumers, and then once they own the consumer, trying to figure out what to do with the consumer. There's also a number of digital mental health startups, things like Lyra, Headspace, and others, and Amwell, a large telehealth company, works in this area as well. Virtual health, our ninth point, clearly exploded last year. And the fascinating thing that people are watching in virtual healthcare is as follows. Virtual health / telehealth before the pandemic was 5 to 10% of visits, particularly outpatient visits. During the pandemic, it moved up to 85 to 90% plus of outpatient visits. Now it's back to 25 to 30 plus percent. And the fascinating situation is what this hybrid world will look like and how those that are in the virtual world will have the depth to back up their virtual offerings and integrate with those that are in the non-virtual world. This movement back to seeing patients in person on some hybrid level is well evidenced sort of in the urgent care area. In the urgent care area, people moved over the last decade from going to the primary care physician to going to an urgent care to going to telehealth. Now you see a lot of people rebounding quickly back to actually going to urgent care in person, because very quickly when you go in person and get the flu test, the mono test, the COVID test, the strep test, all kinds of these things done in a hurry. So the fascinating thing is to see where this all plays out in terms of in-person versus virtual. And it'll be some mix, of course. The 10 points we'll make, which is probably is a really important point in healthcare, is that more and more of the direct consumer efforts act like the asset light models that are so popular in the NASDAQ that are so profitable and so scalable. Asset light, meaning you own the technology, you own the distribution system, but you don't own actually the assets, the bricks and mortars of hospitals and health systems, or employ thousands of physicians. More and more of these are helping patients diagnose and find providers and patients without owning the ecosystem. Babylon Health is a good example of this. Ada is another example of this, which is in the direct consumer chat box, you know, space, direct consumer healthcare. Again, and the idea is more like Airbnb and Uber than huge owned networks. There are a ton of other companies, or 11 point, that are aimed at working with health systems, improving the health system's operations. These are companies like Cedar for financial experience, LeanTos, Acasa in the revenue cycle area, VisitPay, Memora, which is intended to help tech and communications throughout systems. There's just a lot of different efforts that are sort of digital health, asset light, but trying to scale. 12th point we'll make is there is a lot of focus along all these areas on improving consumer and patient experience. And a lot of these digital health tools are used to improve navigation and communications. Navigation and communication is still a very sore spot for many large academic medical centers, and constant efforts trying to improve this. It helps avoid patients, it helps reduce patient stress, having patients better informed and better communicated with, but it's got to communicate in the way that patients want to be communicated with, and it helps reduce labor costs because you don't have patients that are stressed constantly going for information. There's a lot of incentives to try and improve this. Other things that we're seeing are, obviously, this movement towards work from home has led to a tremendous number of tools being used there and developed there to help people work from home, again, in some hybrid models, just like virtual care. The next point we'll see is that you see a ton more efforts around what we call predictive analytics. Juventus is a company that's a great example there. You know, and again, it's one of the healthcare hubs coming out of the Bay Area, Silicon Valley, and so forth. Austin also is a healthcare digital health hub. There's a lot of those. And I'll come back again to a number of the core areas in digital health. It include six of them that we hear about a lot, and some of these are direct to consumer. Telehealth and virtual health, of course. Second, remote patient monitoring. Third, behavioral health. Fourth, you've got this consumer-driven, very consumer-driven direct-to-consumer efforts. And many funds are being formed to focus on this. Advocate Aurora just funded a venture vehicle focused on this. There are also a lot of efforts on testing and tracking diagnostics. Some of those direct-to-consumer, more and more direct-to-consumer, health equity, and a lot around improving operations and improving patient and provider experience. We expect that you'll continue to see this 20% of funding to direct-to-consumer grow more and more. The different benefits and problems with direct-to-consumer health are essentially as follows. The beauty is you can access patients and consumers directly, and your audience is 303 million people in this country and billions in other countries. There's no necessary middleman. So that also helps, too. It gives you ease of entry. The great problem with direct-to-consumer, of course, is it's very hard at the end of the day to get the scale that you want to get without having ties and relationships with big payers, big providers, big other types of systems, or the Amazons or Apples of the world. In any event, this is 15 to 16 thoughts around what's going on with digital health investing. You know, the great question, of course, always asked is, are we in the second inning or the eighth inning? And the jury is out of that. Thank you very much for listening to the Becker's Healthcare Podcast today on trends in digital health investing. Thank you.